Welcome to the Omni Gamers Club podcast, the podcast for games on all platforms, including playing I Spy for 3 hours when stuck in the car with your toddler due to traffic. But that's enough about my weekend. I am Daniel Winter.
And I'm Mark Uessa. Yeah, that sounds like enough traffic for a lifetime, to be honest.
Yes, yeah, not staying out of the car for about a week now to make up for it. How are you, Mark?
I'm well, yeah. I just got a little jaunt out of town, and I didn't run into nearly as much traffic, so I'm re-energized and right back in it.
Excellent. Getting that living that road trip life. So what's to talk about today? This is the playlist where we talk about news and various other games we have been playing. Lots of news to talk about this week. So shall we get right to it?
Yeah, let's get to the main story news-wise.
Yeah, well, we're recording a little late this episode, so we actually have time to talk about probably the biggest news this week. That is the Spiel des Jahres winners were announced. Very gratified to see that the only game of all those nominated, the only game that I had played won. So obviously I made the correct choice there. So that is Sky Team by Luc Remond. Which this is a two-player cooperative game that won the main award, the Spiel des Jahres. Then there was also the Kinderspiel. The winner was Die Magischen Schlüssel, the Magic Keys, by Markus Slowacek and Arno Steinwender. And the Kennerspiel, that is the sort of connoisseur's game, was Emission, Daybreak in English, by Matt Leacock and Matteo Menapace, which is a sort of climate change awareness board game, as most wouldn't know it. I haven't not played that, but that's probably the one I'm most curious about. So do you have any thoughts on the winners here, Mark?
Yeah, you know, I really don't. Unlike you, I haven't played any of these games, so I have the least amount of knowledge. I'm usually behind the curve anyways. Mm. I don't watch the Oscars because I never watch movies in the years that they come out either. But I know that Sky Team is on Board Game Arena.
Yes.
I haven't tried it yet, though.
Yeah, I have played that one. So it's a two-player cooperative game with some pretty novel ideas. It's not doing anything new in terms of mechanics. You're rolling dice and matching those to numbers, but a pretty novel implementation of theme and cooperation in terms of prioritizing, communicating, and the way those representing the different flight mechanics. And I have only played the base game, which is something of a tutorial, and there's like 20 different cities, each city having slightly different mechanics and sort of adding on different complexities. So there's quite a bit of depth to explore there. Very, very simple, accessible little cooperative game for two players. So that's Sky Team. Magic Keys, I don't know anything about, but I have a five-year-old who's increasingly into board games, so we'll definitely be taking a close look at that.
Very nice. Well, I'm sure all of those nominated and winning games will get quite a boost in sales, as they often do.
Yes, hard luck finding them at this rate.
Yep, that's right. Actually, I have a little bit of news that I read that's related to Spiel des Jahres and Kennerspiel. So I'd like to read it out. This is just a social media post I happened to catch just today by one Elizabeth Hargraves. So
designer some of people, Wingspan.
That's right. Some people mm-hmm. may know her as the designer of Wingspan. Tessie Mussey, that's obviously a breakout hit game, Wingspan, so a lot of notoriety there. So she has been collecting some stats about the Spiel des Jahres and Kennerspiel des Jahres. So I'll just roll right into it and say that since 1979, 142 designers were nominated for 112 games for the SDJ. That's 7 of those individuals were women. And for the Kennerspiel, since it's a newer award, only from 2011, 64 designers were nominated for 42 games, and only 5 of those were women. No women were nominated in the years of 2023 and 2024.
Yeah, not great odds there.
Not great odds, and it's not heading in a good direction. So she caps it off to say, play more games with and by women. And I agree. I know so many talented players and designers that are women. So I can't see why these games couldn't be nominated. I know SDJ is a particular crowd. It's only games that are published in Germany and for the German audience. So it doesn't represent everyone, but
it's a little arbitrary what games can be nominated for that. Yeah. But it is a sort of representative sample of the hobby. I saw a comment on that post that they actually made some comments during the show about the increase in women in the hobby more broadly, at least in sort of in, as players, but there wasn't really much commentary on replicating that for the on the design space. And it's hard to say where the responsibility is on the publisher level, on the sort of jury level for the awards. It's obviously, everyone can be doing a bit more work to make it a more diverse hobby.
Right. So I thought that that was important, and I caught that on Blue Sky, by the way. Mm. So go and follow Elizabeth Hargraves there for continued stats,
more stats.
Year by year as they come in. Any more news from you?
Yeah, I just wanted to run through a few sort of crowdfunding announcements, a few things that are out right now. The first one I saw, possibly more of interest to you, I thought, was that Cavern Shuffle. So this is from Gravy Boat Games, who made Gather Your Party, I think it was, a game that you'd been talking about from the right. TCTC episode.
Yeah, I picked up that copy, having played it quickly with you and a couple of others at the con. I actually very briefly met the designer because he was demoing it at the Indie Alley and got a couple stickers, so it was very nice. I have to admit, I really haven't played a lot of Gather Your Party since then. But as soon as I can convince my kid, who is a avid role-playing TTRPG fan, to try it out, I do intend to.
Well, this is a solo game, and specifically a solitaire game, in that it's heavily based on the traditional card game Solitaire, with a few sort of fantasy dungeon-delving twists of monsters and traps to avoid, and having to level up your party members in particular order to overcome those traps. So pretty light, simple game, but hey, portable solo games are you know, always great to have on hand. And it's got a fantastic art style. I can't remember the artist. I think it was a Dutch artist who made a webcomic, but it has a very distinctive style, which is something I think was missing in Gather Your Party. It was a very minimalistic.
Very minimal, yeah. Design. I thought it was quite clean, though. Mm. Nice, attractive package, but yeah, not a lot of overflowing of personality.
Yeah. So that is Cavern Shuffle on Kickstarter, I think, right now.
Very nice.
So next up we have Wandering Galaxies. So this is the latest game from Plaid Hat Games. So this is in a similar vein to Forgotten Waters. Sorry, I nearly said Forbidden Waters. Forgotten Waters. And the latest one is Freelancers. That's right. Yes, Freelancers, which I've not played, but Forgotten Waters is amazing. I've only played it a couple of times, but it left a really strong impression in terms of storytelling. Probably the best writing I have seen in a board game. And also, a lot of it's delivered via an app. You can get a booklet to read through it yourself, or you can have the app read out all the dialogue for you. And it was a really strong focal performances in that game. So it's a bit of a sort of choose your own adventure, cooperative choose your own adventure, have some light leveling up party game. And this is a sci-fi take on that.
Right. And both of those games you mentioned were a Crossroads game, right?
Yes.
That's their shtick.
But it's come a long way from Dead of Winter.
Right. Yeah, that's the game I'm more familiar. It's the only game I'm familiar with that had that Crossroads mechanism. But I thought it was pretty compelling even then. Mm. So I'd be interested to see where it's evolved to.
Yeah, I think they've made some really strong improvements on that formula. Especially in the broad writing, and the theme comes across really strong. And I'm like, hey, love some sci-fi. Get a gang together and a very scrappy ship, and each person manning their own station at the ship. So obviously, very sort of Star Trek or Firefly feeling there. So very very excited about Wandering Galaxies, also currently on Kickstarter.
I'm going to mention a Kickstarter or a crowdfunding campaign for not a game, but for a platform for making games or running games. So this is something I just stumbled upon. It's called Tabletop Mirror. I haven't tried this myself, but apparently it's a platform that lets you run games, sort of like Roll20, but it also lets you create homebrew systems. So if you're an indie tabletop role-playing designer, you can create your own systems, homebrew systems. You can manage your own campaigns, create lore like timelines, calendar systems. If you want to go really deep into managing lore, you can create your own custom character sheets, make maps. And like I said, you can run all of those custom creations. You're not limited to the systems that other more popular, more mainstream platforms give you. So that seems really interesting. One of the cool things that they say is that they'll always be free. And there is a backer kit campaign running now, I believe, to add some more new features in the future. But it's not mandatory. Now, play by mail is being offered in the Tabletop Mirror system as well. So very cool. All that sounded really interesting to me. If anyone's an aspiring game designer, or even you have your own idea for a campaign, maybe you might want to check it out to organize your material.
So is that system agnostic, or are they sort of adding compatibility for specific systems?
It already has support for popular systems like, 5e, obviously, and Pathfinder and things like that built in. And you can, through the built-in online tools, create your own systems or conceivably create, support for other popular systems like 2D20 or Cypher or things like that.
Somewhat sort of not open source, but very customizable at the very least.
Yeah, that's right. It's like a software building platform. And as a person in the software development industry myself, I'm really impressed by what I see there.
Very cool. Yeah. Well, speaking for crowdsourcing platforms, one I'd noticed is that there's a whole suite of crowdfunding campaigns right now under the umbrella of Moonbeam. So Moonbeam is a new streaming platform. It looks to be envisioning a sort of combination of Twitch as a streaming platform and Discord as a sort of community hub in one spot, which I think is an admirable goal. In terms of keeping everything in one space, social media right now definitely feels very fractured, and I think it's primed for a new entrant to come in and shake things up a bit. I have some reservations that I'll keep to myself, but I think it's very it's a cool idea, and obviously we all have issues with Twitch and YouTube as platforms, so a new entrant there is always good to. Yeah, have more options. There's, in addition to that, there's also half a dozen other projects. Sort of, I don't exactly know how this works. I've not seen it before, but it's sort of sub projects underneath this umbrella. Evil Hat Games, the role playing publisher, has a series of GM panels that they're crowdsourcing. And there's a couple of actual plays. I think it's a Project Dustan, I think it's pronounced, a sort of collaboration, or sort of collective of Indian streamers looking to organize an actual play and other projects together. So there's a lot of fun, a lot of talented creators putting together some projects there. It does seem... It's an ambitious project to launch this all under this new streaming platform. It's a big ask, I think. The goals are very small, so at least for the main platform. So I assume there's going to have to be funding elsewhere. You can't fund a social media platform on BackerKit, right? It requires a lot more investment long term. So there's not really a precedent for having a crowdfunding a platform like that. So I'm curious where that goes at least. And seeing how that evolves. Yes, it's a bunch of cool projects under sort of the Moonbeam
umbrella. That project, that name definitely caught my attention. Although just what the connection was a little hard to see. I follow Evil Hat Games. I follow Monty Cook Games, which is also doing a Moonbeam-related crowdfunding campaign right now. And it took me a while to realize that they were the same thing.
It's a little confusing, connected. Yeah.
So obviously they've sold the idea on to them, and those publishers make games that I really like Fate, Thirsty Sword Lesbians from Evil Hat,
to Blades name in the Dark, a few. Which you've spoken about a bit. Yeah,
Blades in the Dark, so many popular platforms, and Monty Cook Games, of course, makes Cypher and Numenera, which I love. So obviously they made a compelling pitch to them, and maybe they just convinced them, hey, you guys don't have a really super strong streaming and social media presence and actual play presence. So maybe let us do it for you. And, you know, that seems like a smart idea for a small business. So maybe, I don't know, maybe I'll throw them a few bucks. I don't know. I'm similar boat to you. I don't know how I feel about it. It's hard to say you're confident about something that hasn't been done before.
You're paying for an unproven concept, right? On a platform that hasn't proven itself yet and isn't available to even test yet. So, I mean, paying money for these GM panels that you might not want, like, if you don't have easy access to this platform, it's a bit of a hard sell.
But maybe that's what crowdfunding is for, rather than as a pre-order system for established publishers, right?
True. Yeah.
Maybe that's what it should be for trying new, interesting things that haven't been done before. So, yeah, I'm trying to keep my mind open.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that option is definitely there. So that is the Moonbeam Revolution, I think, is the sort of the full project umbrella.
Very cool.
Any other news, Mark?
I think there's a campaign that sort of caught both of our eyes, so why don't you tell us about it?
Oh, yes, sorry, there's one more on my list here. That is Coyote and Crow, the sort of role-playing system, have a Kickstarter campaign out right now for an expansion. I'm probably going to butcher this pronunciation, but Ahu Tico? Looks to be focusing on a sort of horror, small-town horror theme to the Coyote and Crow universe, which is Native American, indigenous designed and themed role-playing system. I've not looked into a great deal, but always excited to see new voices and new perspectives in role-playing. And yeah, the horror sort of storytelling theme sounds interesting. They seem to be playing up that the book works as just sort of an experience to read through it, even if you're not going to play the game. There's still a mystery to be solved just in reading through the role-playing book itself.
That's very cool. That sounds very exciting. So let's keep an eye on those projects.
Yeah, lots to be excited about right now.
Yeah. Shall we talk about games we have been playing?
Yes, yeah, there's plenty of those to talk about too. So where should we start? So video games. I don't have a lot to talk about lately. I've between our featured game and wrapping up Lords of the Fallen, I've been I got a bit stuck in trying to finish that. We've both spoken about it a little bit. You seemed to not be particularly impressed. It did leave a good impression on me at the beginning in terms of it being a fairly accessible Souls-like game, and there was a fairly easy ramp at the beginning. Solid combat system, solid sense of exploration in sort of the two realms that you can explore. I will say that difficulty ramp does tend to escalate at a pretty steep pace, at a linear progression curve, though, I will say. These Souls games have a bit of a notorious reputation for throwing the hardest boss at the very beginning, and not just because you're unfamiliar with the systems, but it seems like a bit of a gateway check. It's like, are you really sure this is what you want? Are you really willing to put yourself through this? And so that's obviously an early gateway for a lot of players. Lords of the Fallen doesn't take that approach. It sort of does ease you in before it gets particularly difficult. So I did appreciate that. I will say the way in which it eventually gets difficult seems to be just to be as annoying as possible. Mm-hmm. there's a huge run of bosses at the very end that will just spam fire attacks that have a habit of filling the screen with particle effects, throwing you into tight alleyways in which you can't maneuver and the camera gets stuck on things. Just giant bosses that break your camera and your targeting, and just not challenging in ways that aren't fun to overcome, right? Just very frustrating elements. So I didn't love that. I was pretty frustrated by the end, but I was too far in by then to give up. The last few bosses actually were pretty easy, so I was able to wrap that up. I did really enjoy it overall. So the systems are really solid. It just takes the worst lessons from Souls games instead of trolling the players, both in those boss designs and just like those gotcha moments I've mentioned previously, and just the opaqueness of the quest design. Like, side characters will have quests that you need to meet and give them things, but it'll move around with no warning, and unless you're backtracking constantly, there's no hope of ever happening to complete these quests unless you're following a guide. So it's just like being mysterious and arcane with no real purpose that I see. But the core mechanics there are solid if you're willing to look at a guide or bear with it.
Yeah, that doesn't sound very fun at all. So I think I made the right decision in bouncing off of that one. Speaking of boss battles, I'm still chipping away at the Prince of Persia Lost Crown. That game is really nice for kind of like popping into every now and again, and I'm just like slowly progressing it. Just beat a boss battle right, you know, an hour or so before starting this recording, and it's just, you know, fun. You know, like I died a couple of times and then got it by the third or fourth time, and just feel, you know, success. You know, I overcame that hurdle, but it wasn't so frustrating that I was throwing the controller against the wall.
Yeah, I found the boss designs in that to be really tight in ways that were incredibly frustrating and seemed like overpoweringly, like incredibly strong and impossible to beat on your first run.
Right.
But then once you notice, there's a pattern there to figure out and overcome. And so that is the sort of satisfying frustrations to work through as opposed to fighting the game systems itself.
Yeah, and how that game expertly balances the traversal mechanics with combat. Every traversal technique you learn can also be utilized in combat, which is fantastic. It makes it a really balanced, kind of fair game design that I like a lot.
Yeah, it can be a little arbitrary at times trying to figure out, what attacks can be parried, what attacks need to be dodged completely, right? What's unblockable, but largely that it was pretty satisfying. I will say something I meant to bring up in the news very quickly is that there's a new podcast I wanted to recommend that is All My Best Friends Are Digital, I think is the name. I might be missing a word there. But this is a new spin-off from Mark Bigney of So Very Wrong About Games and Caitlin Bailey are starting a new podcast about video games and similar format to us in terms of instead of focusing on one featured game per episode. And their most recent episode was on Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown. So if you want to hear more about that game, go check out that podcast.
Very good. I'll definitely check that out. I'm going to mention a new game I played that's very, very different from Prince of Persia or Lords of the Fallen. It's called Mahou Kenshi, which means magic swordsman, essentially, Japanese word. And this game is kind of unlike a lot of games that I've tried, but it interested me because it mixes a few genres that I do enjoy. So what it is, it's a deck-building card game that plays over a hex-based grid, and it's a tactical war game. It's a deck-building tactical war game played on a hex-based grid.
So a little bit like Floppy Knights, perhaps, that we've discussed, which was using cards to manipulate a tactics game?
Yeah, it is actually a decent amount like that. Of course, Floppy Knights is based on a square grid and fairly simplistic, although by the later worlds, it did get more complex. This game seems to have the complexity built in from the start. There's four different character classes. Each of those, you build out a new deck for each level/challenge. Each challenge has multiple sort of degrees of success, and there are different types of challenges. So one of them is like close the evil spawning portals, or some of them are just defeat all the baddies on the thing, or it's like survive this long. So I enjoy that variety, and I enjoy how the character classes, which you unlock one at a time, I've just unlocked two of them so far, play very differently from each other, pretty much from the get-go. And unlike something like Slay the Spire, which is just about the roguelite run, right? This one character survived till the end. This one gives you an opportunity to level up each character class separately, and your reward for beating these levels is you're leveling up those characters long-term. And they unlock new cards to add to their decks. Basically, you can kind of traverse the land on different spots, collect money, burn cards, buy new cards, upgrade cards. So it's just a very different flow than a more traditional one like Slay the Spire. And I'm enjoying it quite a bit. And it's not easy either. It's kind of kicking my butt at some point. So it encourages replay that way. So that game, Mahou Kenshi, pretty decent.
Interesting. I'd not heard of this one, but very, very cool concept.
Yeah, PC only, as far as I'm aware.
Okay, Very cool.
Right. How about yourself? Any more?
I'll leave it there for video games. I've got a couple of board games to talk about, but if there's anything else you wanted to,
okay,
to run through.
The other game that seems to be popular at the moment is a free-to-play third-person MMO shooter RPG called First Descendant. And it's, like I said, free-to-play. I think it is on Xbox, but you play it on PC as well. And it's kind of a bit meh. it's a Korean developer, I think, and the character designs are pretty meh, but for some reason people seem to enjoy it. Maybe I just haven't gotten very far in it. So it's third person shooting and you got these superpowers, and one of the cooler aspects of it is that you have a grappling hook, sort of not unlike Halo Infinite, but you can use it to grapple onto bosses. So you can use it to grapple onto their body parts, kind of like Shadow of the Colossus or something like that.
Pretty cool.
And you can shoot them with guns and things like that too. So there's parts of it that are compelling to me.
You want to like it.
Yeah, I want to like it, yeah. But it might not be. It might just be a flash in the pan.
It's a fine balance with these online games. They want to be a forever game, right? So you got to hook people to put in that investment, but they can't show all their cards immediately. They were good to give you something to work towards. So, but there's also so many of those games, and we all only have time for so many lifestyle games.
Yeah, a ton of them came out all at once too. So I'll just leave it there with the video games.
Okay, sure. Let's roll over to the tabletop. So board games, I've been playing quite a few lately, especially with my daughter. This last month has been really into board games. Probably played more this last month than all previous months combined. So obviously pretty simple games, really into the Harbor, like Animal Upon Animal, various
classic
dexterity stacking games, Unicorn Glitterluck, some variation on that. Unicorn game, it's a roll and move, very simple, but each of these games is teaching very simple mechanics, whether it's the concept of rolling a dice or the concept of collecting victory points. I guess the thing with Unicorn Glitterluck, it's a roll and move game, but it's not the first person to get to the end that wins. Getting to the end first just gives you a bonus points. It might not necessarily mean you have the most points. So that's they're all teaching some basic concepts that you can layer upon, right, in some clever ways. So starting to explore some more interesting concepts there. She spotted my Lorcana collection and immediately started looking through her favorite cards. So probably a little too soon to be diving into that just yet. One day.
Oh, it's very tempting to break into Daddy's Disney card collection.
Can at least collect the cards as I did with Pokemon back in the day without ever playing that game.
Well, as long as you have a big enough piggy bank, right? Because stuff's not cheap. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. So the one game I have been playing in terms of my games is that I gave in to astonishment and hype and bought a new game. That is Arx, the latest game from Leader and Cole Worley. So
the hotness.
Everyone would have seen the reviews from Shut Up and Sit Down and various others doing the rounds. So in a similar vein to Root and Oath, his previous games from Leader, obviously it's a very woolly game, a lot going on, a lot of moving parts that I could talk about for an hour and then have a completely different experience next game, right? I've struggled with his previous games, partly in the very lot of asymmetrical moving parts, having to learn multiple roles, especially in Root. And the rules, the previous rules tended to be laid out a bit like a legal document. Very, very logically, but not intuitive, for me at least. I just don't have the attention span to read through and internalize the rules laid out like that. I need them laid out a little more thematically, if you know what I mean. And I was excited. I made sure to actually download the rule book before I bought it, saw that it actually was laid out in a more sort of traditional sense of themes and examples. And yeah, very good rule book, I will say. So gave in to try it out, following all the hype, and am having a blast so far. But again, it's a very hard game to talk about. So this is a Ostensibly, it started out as a 4X game, or like a space exploration 4X-ish game. People are comparing it to Twilight Imperium, of all things, which, you know, which is the grandfather of the genre, right? So the trick to this is, as many will first to point out, is that it's a trick-taking game, except that it isn't really. It uses the language of trick-taking as a basis to sort of improvise the action selection, at least in that you have a hand of cards, and to take an action, you have to play a card to the trick or the run of cards. There's no trump suits. There's no taking So there's no trump suit, and there's no winning the trick. What you do have is someone leads with playing a particular card, particular suit of card, each suit being a type of action, whether it's sort of a more infrastructure building and taxing your system, or a more military based suit like moving and attacking. And the lead player will play a card, and everyone has to follow that suit if they want to get the full value of the card, or play a different suit to get a lesser value of the card. And so that's the main tension here, is what card you're going to play. You can play any suit you want, largely, but you only get a single action of that. Or you can stick to the suit from the lead player and get some more actions. But then there's also variations on how you can take the lead yourself for the next turn, because you can either play a higher card for that suit, or you can play a second. You can discard a whole other card to steal the initiative for the next round and make sure that you're the lead player. So there's lots of decisions in every single card that you play before you even start thinking about what actions you're going to take. The analogies I really liked about this, though, I think it was Dan Thoreau made this point, is that 4X games tend to make the presumption that you have perfect control over your empire. Your ships are always where you want them to be. Your people always follow your orders clearly. Whereas this really captures that sense of a sprawling empire not having total control, right? Like you might plan a turn around having a bunch of you want to attack a bunch of other players and steal their cities, but then you get a hand of cards that are all taxation, because it's like getting the reports from your generals who are on the front lines that the troops aren't in position. And so you really have to improvise. You can never have perfect control. You have to make plans on the fly, basically. I personally appreciate that. I'm the sort of gamer who likes improvising and winging it a little more, rather than planning my strategy 5 turns in advance. Like even like routes, you definitely have to improvise, but there's definitely a better sense of wanting to make long-term plans and negotiating with other players to make sure that those plans happen, right? Whereas here, everything is constantly changing. Every round, the dynamics of the table are completely evolving in some really interesting ways. And obviously, that's barely scratching the surface on how this game plays. I don't want to belabor this. I am finding it a very fascinating game. The dynamics are always changing, round to round, turn to turn, game to game. And there's the whole other campaign that I haven't even touched. I haven't even bought yet. But the base game has a lot of depth to explore there.
Yeah, it definitely sounds compelling. What you were saying there about sort of not having full control reminded me of sort of the golden age novels of sci-fi, like Foundation or Dune, which both happened to be turned into
the logistics of
screen
empire.
Spectacles. Yeah, exactly. They were all written in the aftermath of World War I and II, which showed the world, you know, what a sprawling global conflict, large-scale conflict could be, with so many points of logistics to manage. And I think that those themes really carry forward in those fictional creations. And I was just reminded of that when you're talking about Arx, because it is itself a space sci-fi game, I guess like Twilight Imperium is as well. It seems compelling. I haven't really had good luck with leader games, though. There basically isn't any one of them that I like. Not that I haven't given them a shot, but something about them just doesn't really connect for me. maybe like Fort is like the closest one that I like, maybe because it's a bit smaller.
They're an investment, I find, both in the rules overhead, and that they tend to be best with a group who's all familiar with it, right? A dedicated group, Oath especially, like really wants a dedicated group to commit to see the campaign and the evolution of the... That evolves game to game much more in between game sessions. It's very much a meta around that as it progresses. So that behooves having a core group, which I didn't really have. Some really fascinating concepts, but it's such a huge investment to learn the rules if you don't have a dedicated group. Roots just had the overhead of the different factions you have to learn. So Arx definitely is more accessible. I mean, it's still a very complicated game. I said very woolly and rough and unpredictable, unfair at times. But you can get in with a new group of players, and it's a little more, I wouldn't say intuitive, but less overhead at least to get in the front door. One of my friends just keeps saying, you know, this is a game. And obviously you can treat that as a Rorschach test of whatever you want it to mean. But for me, it's like so many games these days feel like they're overbalanced, overpolished. Everyone finishes within 2 points of each other. It feels a little bit on rails. Like everything's obvious what you should do, right? Here, you cannot make plans. You can, or you can, but... You never know what you're going to expect in this game. I said, constantly evolving, always going to be an interesting story to come out of it. Cole has spoken quite a bit about how he envisions this as having a sort of emergent narrative, which I haven't seen a lot of yet. I think partly because we're still getting to grips with the rules and internalizing that. But we're already starting to see some fun dynamics and strategies and meta as we figure out the systems and how things interact. And it's a lot more to explore in this. A different player counts to it, plays quite differently. So that's Arx.
That's very cool to hear. If you'll allow me, I just realized that I forgot a game a video game that I mentioned, and it's pretty fascinating. So I think it's worth mentioning.
Okay.
At least in brief. So I tried the new Capcom game called Kunitsugami.
Oh, yes.
Which is another sort of Japanese setting themed mm-hmm. game, but it plays very differently than pretty much anything I played before. It's another sort of blending of genres. It's a total bait and switch. I started playing it. I thought, oh, this is going to be Souls-like, or it's going to be a fast action game like Monster Hunter or something.
I've seen
like
the trailers for this. It is incredibly vibrant and colorful, and I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, the art style is amazing. It's this sort of like psychedelic, trippy vision of, I guess, like very kind of feudal. There's some definite aspects like pre-Buddhist Japanese lore, and it's very cool to see. But that's not what really hooked me about it. It was first of all, the UI is amazing. This just has to be seen to be believed. They make use of these very traditional kind of like Shinto scrolls and artifacts, emblems and tokens and charms, these sort of artifacts that you find at temples. But beyond that, it's this blending of genres. So it is an action game. It is third person. It's almost 2.5D because it starts side-scrolling, and then eventually you realize you have full control over the camera, but it's still top-down. It's kind of like three quarters, but the enemies can come at you in different directions. And then you beat the intro, which is all action, and you're like, okay, ho-hum, yeah, this is all right, you know, very stylish. And then you get to the first level proper. And then, lo and behold, spoilers, this is a RTS game.
Huh.
This is a third-person action RTS town-building management game.
Interesting. I heard it compared to, like, tower defense or like Overlord, having like little followers to help you and things.
It definitely has tower defense qualities to it. You're the sort of like faceless masked soldier, swordsman, and you have to defend this kind of priestess, and she is sort of like performing these rites, and she has to be defended at all costs. She's kind of the tower. But she's mobile, and you have to clear a path for her, and you rescue these villagers along the way, and they can sort of become your foot soldiers, but you can give them different character classes as well. So that part of it's really cool. They can be towers or they can be soldiers. But they also serve a purpose outside of the combat, as in they can repair temples, or they can chop wood, or they can mine for stone. So there's so many things going on here, and it kind of works.
Okay.
But it's baffling. It's very hard to describe. The kind of thing that it like spiritually reminds me of is a game called ActRaiser from the Super Nintendo era. Okay. Which is another Japanese design game that was a side-scrolling action RPG town management game. And I guess you could call it like a new version of that.
So interestingly, all my best friends are digital. We're actually just talking about that game, which I'd completely missed. So that, and that sounded fascinating in blending those two game modes.
This game is very, very much a blend, but I think it's going to be divisive. Because a lot of people are just going to bounce off of it as a bait and switch. They probably think they're going to go into it thinking it's all action, and it's definitely not. So be forewarned.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you said that the sort of UI and graphic design is strong, because I was a little worried that it would just be too busy to figure out what was happening on the screen with all these effects and psychedelic colors. And
it's really not. Like, that's there, but it's sort of like Lords of the Fallen, right? Lords of the Fallen has sort of like two layers to the world.
Right.
Yeah. There's like the other side, and then there's the kind of the normal side. And this game very much has that. I've only played the beginning, but it starts off in the weird, trippy, otherworldly side. And as you're blessing the landscape and cleansing it, it returns to this sort of lush, pastoral, more natural side.
So it comes in waves, that sort of busyness. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's sort of like the darkness that you're trying to clear away by performing your rituals. So super cool, super fascinating. I want to keep playing it.
Yeah, I mean, looking forward to checking that out. I've just got a few other games in the burner and a vacation coming up. So when I come back from that, I'll probably check that out, maybe on a future pod.
Very cool. All right. Sorry to derail us there. You have more board games.
I think we'll leave it there. I don't want things running too late today. Sorry, a lot of distractions. The animals are being super restless today. The phones are buzzing. Let's keep rolling ahead here.
That's summertime for you. Yeah, I don't have too much either to talk about, except that I just took my first dabble at a game I've been meaning to called Arctic Scavengers.
Ooh, yeah.
It's an older game. It's on BGA. I just don't know how this game works. I'm stumbling through it, but it seems like there's something cool there. And I think Shut Up and Sit Down was actually pretty favorable about it.
Yeah. I seem to recall this being mentioned in context of, was it Arnak? Flashback to our very first episode, in terms of it being sort of worker placement and deck building.
Yes.
And I think it was the first game to sort of try that hybrid.
Yeah, it seems similar to a lot of things that I like. Deck building plus more. It's somewhat reminiscent of a little bit of Eminent Domain, which is a game I really like. But I'm obviously not playing it very well optimally. I think I just have to try it a few times and learn the ropes.
Excellent. Yeah, I've struggled with learning games on BGA, to be honest. I always prefer playing it in person. There's something about, I never have the patience to sit down and internalize the rules fully when it's playing asynchronously like that. So if you have the chance to try it in person one day, let's take a look.
Makes sense. All right, cool. Any other games you've been playing?
No, I've a couple of other games that I'm still very early on with, so I'll save my impressions for next episode.
Okay, cool. I'll just say that I'm reading more of 5 Parsecs from Home. I'm actually learning the rules now, and I think I'm internalizing them a bit more. I actually pulled out the little sticky flags, and I've been like color coding the chapter headers now for both 5 Parsecs from Home and my Star Trek Captain's Log solo RPGs. So I'm filling out the Modiphius Digest book collection.
Excellent. Yeah, I've been starting to read a couple of RPG books myself, hoping to get the ball rolling on a couple of campaigns when I get back from vacation. And so I think, speaking of vacation, I think you're going to be having a special guest or two while I'm away. We've got one more episode coming up next week where we'll be talking about our featured game, Chance of Sinnar. And after that, we'll go on a bit of another summer break, and we'll announce our plans in the coming weeks.
Yep, that's right. It'll be We'll be a little rocky there scheduling wise, but we'll make something happen.
Yep. We'll find some friends.
All right. Shall we leave it there?
I think so. Yeah, let's go and cool down.
Right. Like you mentioned there very briefly, our next feature game is Chance of Sinnar. Go check it out. It's a puzzle game that's currently on Xbox Game Pass.
Yes, see, I need to push through that still before I leave, so that's it's on the to-do list. But enjoying what I've seen so far.
Very cool. All right. So if you're listening, go check it out.
Yeah. So if you have any questions or comments on that or any other games we've been talking about today, you can join the club and email us at omnigamersclub@gmail.com or at our website, omnigamers.club.
And you can catch these episodes on YouTube if you haven't done that yet. We're posting these episodes weekly. And if you've caught us from YouTube, then go. You can also listen to us in the podcatcher of your choice.
Yep. Many ways to join the club now to your platform of choice. And always excited for other people to join in the conversation.
That's right. All right. I think we've talked enough games. Let's get back to playing them.
Of course. So thanks for listening. And remember to have a balanced diet of games.
Bye.
Bye.